Welcome to Mommy Heal Thyself. We feature guests who provide you with the tools, resources, and strategies you need to say no to a life of pain and suffering from all forms of preventable disease, toxic drugs, and unnecessary surgeries. We hope to inspire you to boldly reclaim your ability to heal and to serve the ones you love. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Mommy Heal Thyself. Today, I have with me the wonderful Dr. Nancy O'Hara, who is a board-certified pediatrician specializing in treating PANS, PANDAS, and BGE, and other neurodevelopmental disorders. She's a leading trainer and mentor of clinicians in the United States and globally, educating medical professionals to recognize, diagnose, and treat PANS, PANDAS, and BGE. Now, Dr. O'Hara graduated with highest honors from Brian Maurer College, as a part of the Alpha Omega Alpha Honor Society from the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. She's earned her master's degree in public health from the University of Pittsburgh and completed her residency, chief residency, and general pediatric fellowship at the University of Pittsburgh. Before she started her medical career, Dr. O'Hara taught children with autism. From 1993 to 1998, Dr. O'Hara was a practicing general pediatrician and a partner in a practice, group practice. In 1999, she began her consultative integrative practice for children with special needs, dedicating her practice and treating children with neurodevelopmental disorders such as ADHD, PANS, PANDAS, BGE, OCD, Lyme, autism spectrum disorder. Whew, that is a whole heap of stuff, Dr. O'Hara.
A whole heap.
I just barely made it through.
Well, thank you. The truth is, I'm just another mom trying to help moms get their kids better. So that's a short version.
Fantastic. And as I was sharing with you before we started, I have to betray my ignorance. When I heard about pandas, I just think the little furry, cute, black and white little things from Australia or wherever they're supposed to be. And then I realized Michelle is probably a little bit more serious than that because she's dedicated her life to this. So I guess we can start with first telling us a little bit about what is PANS, PANDAS, and how did you get caught up in this? How did you even discover that this was a thing?
Yeah. So PANDAS is an acronym and it stands for Pediatric Autoimmune Neuropsychiatric Disorder Associated with Strep. So it's when a child gets a strep infection and then they devolve into anxiety, OCD, tics, some type of neuropsychiatric symptom abruptly. And then PANS was because a lot of doctors thought it was the black and white bears. They didn't take it seriously either. Sue Sweeto had coined the phrase in the 1990s when I first started in practice. And I think if she were a guy, sorry guys, or if she had more of an ego, she would have named it the Sweeto disease and it wouldn't have been so controversial and misunderstood. Mm. So in 2012, they all got together, about 30 clinicians, researchers, and broadened the term to be PANS, which stood for Pediatric Abrupt Onset Neuropsychiatric Syndrome, and took in a lot of other causes like viruses and mycoplasma, which is another bacteria, and Lyme disease and mold and lots of different things. But that only made it more controversial. So I started, as you said, in that lovely introduction, which is in my bio, you know, I was a card-carrying pediatrician doing all the usual stuff. Both of my parents are doctors. Before I went to medical school, I taught kids with autism. So I had a lot of kids with autism in my practice, but I was going through infertility and nothing in Western medicine was helping me. And one of my patients with parents of a child with autism came to me and said, "You got to meet this guy, Sid Baker. He's brilliant and he changed my life." And I said, "Well, how did he change your life?" And he said, "He changed my child's diet." And I thought, well, that's stupid. How does diet help autism? But because I was going through infertility, I went to Sid as a patient and that changed my life. And 6 months later, I was pregnant and I left my general pediatric practice and started my own functional medicine practice for integrating the care of our children with autism. Fast forward 9 years to the early 90s. Well, no, my son was born in the 90s to the early 2000s, and he devolved into seizure-like tics. He would be sitting there doing his homework and then look like he's having a seizure about a few weeks after he had strep throat, got bit by a Lyme-positive tick, and had a viral infection at the same time. And only because I was doing all this work with kids with autism, I had sort of heard of this thing, reached out to one of my colleagues, and they said, "Oh, yeah, that's pandas." And then I dove in headfirst through the kitchen sink at him, got him better within a few months, and then started really focusing on pandas as my focus of practice. And now about 90% of the children in my practice have that disorder. And you mentioned BGE, and let me just explain it a little bit more, because what happens is, let's say you take 200 kids that have strep throat. 199 of them, you treat them appropriately, they'll get better. It was strep throat, no big deal. But about one in 200, it's about one in two in my practice, but let's say in the general population, about one in 200 kids, the immune system, rather than attacking the strep in the throat, instead attacks the basal ganglia. That's the BG in BGE. That's a part of the brain that is in charge of motor development and anxiety and OCD and stuff like that. So these antibodies or these parts of the immune system, rather than attacking the strep in the throat, instead attack the brain and attack the basal ganglia and cause inflammation, which is what the encephalitis is, the E in the BGE, and then they get the symptoms. So it's what we call in medicine molecular mimicry. It's like instead of attacking the right place, you're attacking another part of the body. We saw it historically, like any of our grandparents that may have had rheumatic fever after getting a strep infection. Same sort of thing. And why I call it demystifying pandas, and a guide to basal ganglia encephalitis or BGE is because these other names, so many physicians and other practitioners just find them too kitschy. Just, Sue Sweeto, actually, back to your point about the black and white bears, she was presenting at the American Academy of Pediatrics decades ago. And she was supposed to present about all the research about pandas for 15 minutes. And then this other guy was supposed to present, give a rebuttal. You know what he did for his 15 minutes? He showed pictures of the animal. And this is at a national pediatric, so why I call it basal ganglia encephalitis is because that's what it really is. So what happens is, you get an infection. It doesn't have to be just strep. It could be a tick bite. It could be a virus. It could be COVID. It could be you get in a moldy, water-damaged building. It could be a pesticide exposure. It could be anesthesia. So anything that has happened within a few weeks, usually 2, but all the way up to 3 months, but most of the kids are 4 to 6 weeks later, they developed an abrupt onset of OCD. Now, what's OCD? That's a repetitive, it's not just the hand washing. It can be repetitive thinking, like intrusive thoughts. It can be repeating something over and over again. It can be hoarding behaviors or excessive cleaning behaviors. It could be a restrictive eating disorder. Well, all of a sudden they think all their food is contaminated, or they're afraid of choking or whatever it is. And then together with that, there's one or two of 7 other symptoms. So it could be an abrupt onset of anxiety, a 9-year-old that all of a sudden won't leave mom's side, or behavioral regression, an 11-year-old that starts talking like a baby or only wants to watch Thomas the Tank Engine videos, or heaven forbid, Barney. Or abrupt onset of ADD. All of a sudden they can't process things. One of the things that's like pathognomonic for this is handwriting deterioration. So they were writing just fine, and then all of a sudden you look at their handwriting. I mean, I have so many pictures of this, and it totally changes. They're either writing over and over again, or they can't stay within the lines if they were coloring, whatever it is. Or they could have urinary symptoms. So if they have one of those behavioral symptoms together with an abrupt onset of bedwetting, where they were previously dry at night, or urinary frequency or urgency, or sleep disturbances. The biggest one is what we call REM disinhibition. And doctors use a lot of big words, but I try to explain them. But REM is inhibition, disinhibition just means you're a restless sleeper. You all of a sudden, the sheets are all over the place. You start at one end of the bed, you end up at the other, or you can't get to sleep at all, or you've got these intrusive thoughts all night long. So you just have to have two of those. And again, if it's the handwriting deterioration or the urinary or sleep issues, plus OCD or anxiety or tics, that's this disease. And there's so much you can do about it. So, does that make sense?
Yeah, so now I'm curious as to what is the thought in terms of why it is that for that one child out of 200, the immune system goes berserk and starts attacking the basal ganglia. What are some of the things that may trigger that or make someone more susceptible to that occurring?
Great question. So I always use the term genetics loads the gun, environment pulls the trigger. So first, these kids are genetically susceptible. We know they have problems with their T cells. We also know they may have what's called some HLA-B alleles, similar to other kids with other inflammatory conditions like lupus or vasculitis or things like that. So the things to look for in the history are one, a history of other autoimmune disease in the child or in the first degree relative. So mom has thyroiditis, dad has inflammatory bowel disease, diabetes, grandma or sibling has rheumatic fever, any type of autoimmune disease. That's found in about 65% of these kids. The genetics, you wouldn't know, but you could also have a frequent infection. So a kid that's always getting upper respiratory infections, sinus infections, and then all of a sudden they get an infection and devolve into that. What these repeated upper respiratory infections have done is broken down that blood-brain barrier. And so those are the risk factors. But truly, any child that comes in with an abrupt onset of those symptoms, this should be considered and treated.
So now you were talking about the quote unquote genetic predispositions, but can you tell us a little bit more about the epigenetics? Because as you said, genetics is not really what's driving this at this point in time, or else we would have seen these children for generations and generations going backwards. And what I always say is that our children are like the yellow canaries in the coal mine. They are the ones that are indicating to us that there's something that we need to be paying attention to. And instead of vilifying the genetics of the child, let's look at what's going on that that child is signaling us about. So what are the triggers that are epigenetic or environmental that could lead to flipping that switch on, let's say.
Yeah, great question. And I grew up in West Virginia where we did send the canaries into the coal mines. And when the mines were too toxic, the canaries died and we couldn't send the miners in. And that's what it is. We live in such a toxic world these days. And so those toxins in the mom, as well as then into the child, are what are, predisposing our kids to be sicker. And so it's a combination of less breastfeeding, more C-sections, living in more urban areas, not playing in the dirt. We're so worried about germs these days, but we're not getting our kids outside playing in the dirt, getting the good germs that they need in their bodies. Not eating an organic whole foods diet, our processed foods are really increasing our autoimmune diseases. And using more antibiotics, antibacterial soaps, all of those sort of things. So all of those are influencing our mom's health, but also our baby's health and making them more our canaries.
Yeah, so I was curious. I know you shared a little bit about your history in terms of having difficulty in having a baby at first. And when I work with moms who are in that position, what I share with them is that Mother Nature is very wise. And so if things aren't ideal, so to speak, then she's like, nah, not right now. And so
Right.
I was curious if when you're looking at these children who are manifesting PANS, PANDAS, BGE, do you find that a lot of the mothers were women who had difficulty conceiving or may have had difficulty during pregnancy or things of that nature?
So that has been looked at a lot more in the autism world. We're only starting to get that information in the PANS PANDAS world. We don't have quite the numbers, but in my personal anecdotal experience, absolutely. There's definitely an increased incidence of infertility, particularly and the use of assisted technology. There's an increased risk with multiple ultrasounds. And there's increased risk, as I said, with C-sections and lack of breastfeeding. So, absolutely, those are factors.
Well, tell
And by the
us a
way, it
little
was
bit
nothing
about.
medical that helped me get pregnant. It was craniosacral therapy and fixing my diet and fixing my dysbiosis. So,
Exactly.
anyway.
But tell us a little bit more about the ultrasound component because, as women, we're told ultrasounds are completely safe and you should have no problem getting these ultrasounds done. And so I would love for you to tell us a little bit more about how the ultrasound could affect a developing child in the
Yeah,
womb.
we're still getting the bulk of that research, but there are a couple of good studies that show that the sonar effects on a newly forming fetus are changing the connections that are being made. So not as much of a risk in the third trimester, that sort of thing. But the ones
Early.
that are wanting to do an ultrasound very early, especially first trimester, or let's find out the sex of the baby in the first couple of weeks or, by whatever, that's where I really say take pause. And whenever I do any type of a test, I always say, what am I going to do differently with the results of this test?
Exactly. Is it
You
worth it?
know, is it going to change my management enough? And I just think we're overdoing it, and it's part of the toxic load in this age of screen time and 5G and lack of ozone layers and all the stuff. This is one more piece in the bucket that for a very young fetus that is only a group of cells, it is a factor, can be a factor.
That's just amazing because it really gives us pause to look at other traditions which have an understanding of the import of sound and color
Yeah.
and light and sense in terms of
Yes.
how it affects the physical, mental, and emotional, spiritual development of a person in general. And as you said,
Yeah.
our children, especially that young in their developmental journey, are extremely sensitive and susceptible.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
So now
And
I'm
it's our canaries.
curious because, I'm the kind of person where I'm like, okay, now what do I do with all of this information? So if we have a mom who's looking at your checklist and saying, ugh, I got like two or three on those on that checklist. What can she do? Where can she go? And from what you're saying, it seems like the first thing is that we're going to have to educate our medical providers because most of them are clueless about this. And then what are some things that you have found have been consistent, in terms of things that we can all implement, even if we are not able to get to the high level interventions of a practitioner who knows what's going on.
Right. So with everybody, it should be a three-pronged approach. Okay. Mm-hmm. So one is treating the symptoms. Okay. So that, if the biggest symptom is the kid's not sleeping, mm-hmm. then you need to add something simple to help them sleep. It could be melatonin. Mm-hmm. Melatonin increases our serotonin, which can also help us calm down. That's mm-hmm. something you can easily get. It may be an herb called valerian, which mm-hmm. is also really good for sleep. Mm-hmm. And I can list more of those, but let me first say the three-pronged approach, because the second is treating the immune system. Remember, mm-hmm. this isn't about the germ that causes it. It's about the dysregulation mm-hmm. of the immune system. So the first thing I would do as a mom, if I'm thinking about this, is I would give my child ibuprofen. Mm-hmm. I would give them 10 milligrams per kilogram of ibuprofen, not Tylenol. Mm-hmm. Ibuprofen is like Advil, Motrin, mm-hmm. and see if the flare of behaviors gets better just with mm-hmm. the ibuprofen. Mm-hmm. That there's several research articles on that show that shows that it's inflammation that's causing that behavior. Mm-hmm. Then mm-hmm. if you find the ibuprofen works, there's a lot of great natural anti-inflammatories mm-hmm. like turmeric, mm-hmm. golden milk tea is mm-hmm. a great anti-inflammatory. Aloe, mm-hmm. suck it right out of the plant. Mm-hmm. That's a great anti-inflammatory. Mm-hmm. CBD can be a very good anti-inflammatory, not with THC, but just mm-hmm. the CBD that you can get from a local health food store. Okay. So those are some of the ones that I use. Then mm-hmm. the third is treating the trigger. Now, remember, the trigger isn't always strep. It could be another germ. It could be a virus. Mm-hmm. It could be mold. Mm-hmm. if you just, so you have to know what the trigger was. But mm-hmm. if your child just had a viral infection, for instance, and then this started, think about the things that you use naturally to help viruses. Mm-hmm. Vitamin A, vitamin D. Vitamin D is deficient in 95% of these kids. Mm-hmm. So adding some vitamin D can be very helpful. Mm-hmm. Zinc, zinc is in a lot of our natural cold products. Mm-hmm. Zinc can be very helpful. And then you can consider, if you feel comfortable, using other herbs to treat the microbes if your doctor won't treat with anything else. Mm-hmm. One piece of information, many of these children, even when it's strep, their throats look perfectly fine. Because remember, the immune system's not attacking the throat, it's attacking the brain. Uh-huh. So make sure if you go and your child's been exposed to strep, that you ask the doctor to do a throat culture, even if the throat looks good. Mm. 9 times out of 10, that throat culture is still positive.
Wow.
And then the last thing in treating the symptoms is all those things that we think about in Wim Hof's hot, cold stuff and all the vagal theory stuff. Mm-hmm. It's all about using good techniques to help our children relax, to decrease mm-hmm. that vagal overstimulation. Mm-hmm. So ourselves taking a deep breath, mm-hmm. helping our children to breathe. Doing a good bath, like with Epsom salts and baking soda. Mm-hmm. And maybe if they're taking showers, ending with a cold shower, because that cold resets the vagal nerve. Mm-hmm. Getting good sleep, as I mentioned, mm-hmm. eating well, eating good anti-inflammatory diet, which is no processed foods, more good proteins, all the non-barcode foods, mm-hmm. The stuff that's real food, the fruits, the vegetables, the proteins, etc. And then thinking about other natural ways to help decrease that. But it's really about just decreasing our vagal overstimulation when we talk about treating the symptoms.
Hmm. So now, what can be done to help with the misdirection of the immune system, where the immune system has lost its way, so to speak, and is starting to attack self, Is there something that can be done to help to get it to stop thinking that self is the enemy?
Right. Great question. And it's about first decreasing the inflammation, that autoimmune reaction. And most Western medicine doctors, not functional medicine doctors, will say all you got is ibuprofen, steroids, and IVIG. That's it. That's all you can do for this disease. That I only 20, and I have the worst kids because I have a long waiting list, and I've become an expert in this and all of that. So only 20% of the kids that come to me go on to IVIG, and I can count on one hand the number of kids I use steroids in. So there is a lot you can do. Now, one of them that I find fascinating that I use a lot that Dr. Baker taught me is Helminth therapy, which is actually giving a helminth, which is a grain beetle worm egg, to the child to reset that immune system and induce immune tolerance. So that's a lot of what I do in my practice, but that's what I meant by going out and playing in that dirt. Get that more immune system into the kids. But it's really about decreasing that inflammation with the turmeric. That's my favorite. Or aloe. Or one of those anti-inflammatories to decrease it, then it's about figuring out what triggered this autoimmune reaction, what set it off, and then trying to treat that, and then treating the vagal system to try to relax everything back down. And usually those things work.
So would part of it be getting the testing done to discern what type of pathogen, whether it be viral or bacterial, was part of the triggering mechanism?
Yes, and you can do that all through a conventional lab. I don't like to use a lot of specialty lab tests. Now, one thing, 30% of these kids also have an immunodeficiency. So not only is their immune system dysregulated, they just can't mount the appropriate
The immune
response.
response.
And everything you're measuring in the blood requires you to have an immune system. So the thing that's most
A lot of
positive,
false
and
negatives.
exactly. So don't let a doctor say, well, those strep markers are normal, so it can't be this, or there's nothing in the blood work, so it can't be this. If your child has an abrupt onset of these symptoms, it's this. And you can treat them. And if your doctor won't do it, I'm not trying to sell my book, but you can get the book and take it to your doctor. There's 500 references in there and say it's real, And we just actually published an article on a part of this too, so that you can take the research article too. But anyway, I got off track thinking about that. But anyway, if the blood work is normal, don't rule this out. But the blood work that I get is I get strep markers. They're called ASO, an anti-DNA ASB. I get a mycoplasma test. I get viral tests like for COVID and for viruses that are going around at that time, rhinovirus or enterovirus or whatever. But I also ask to the parents to look at EBV because mono also does it, and herpes, especially if they have cold sores, herpes. So you measure those, but you also measure the immune markers, the anti-nuclear antibody,
DNA.
the SED rate. And the what's called a CRP, a C reactive protein, those are much more likely to be positive. And then I also tell parents to ask the doctor to measure a vitamin D level and a vitamin A level and a zinc level, because if those are low, that's very foundational, and just rechecking those can make a difference. But
Absolutely.
all regular lab, no money out of your pocket.
So now you've mentioned your book. What is the title of your book that we can use as a resource?
It's right behind me somewhere here, but it's Demystifying Pan's Pandas, and it's available on Amazon. And I just a couple weeks ago taped my audiobook, and the audiobook will be available probably next month on Amazon also, and any of the Audible, Spotify, whatever. And I added five new chapters to that on more on Lyme and Lyme co-infections, more on mold, more on COVID, because I wrote this before COVID was, well, it was my COVID baby, but we didn't know as much as we know now. And what I just wrote the article on, which is another part of the thing that a lot of these kids are deficient in, and that's folate, which is a B vitamin. And so I have a whole new chapter on that in the audiobook.
Fantastic. So now to wrap us up, what is the one thing that you would want to leave us with as mothers?
There is hope. It takes a village. Don't give up. Your child can get better. My child had one of the most severe cases I've ever seen, and I miss stuff. Because this was 16 years ago. He's now 26-year-old getting his PhD. So, but don't give up and trust your instincts. And if you go to a doctor or other practitioner that's not listening, go someplace else. My mentor always taught me, if you listen, they will come. And have you done enough for this child? So don't give up. They can get better. It takes a village, and really, you know, the moms are what drives all of this. It's not us doctors. We just have to listen to the moms.
Well, thank you so very much for being with us today. And ladies and gents, we're going to have the link to Dr. O'Hara's website in the show notes, as well as a link to the book. And I encourage you to go out there and get the book. If anything, get the Audible so you can listen to it while you're walking, while you're driving, whatever it is, because I know you guys are busy. So you're going to tell me, Michelle, I don't have time to read. Well, guess what? You have time to listen to stuff instead of listen to all the nonsense on YouTube and whatever, right? So in any
That's
case,
right.
thank you for being with us today. And ladies and gents, until next time, peace and blessings.
Thank you for tuning in for this episode of Mommy Heal Thyself. If you like what we're doing here, please share, subscribe, like us, and leave a comment. Your feedback is very much appreciated.